The following interview with Alan Hoffman from the University of Alaska was conducted by Mike Malevsky during the morning show on Wednesday, October 1st. Enjoy. My wife tells me that you have a passion for air traffic control.
I do. When I went to work for the FAA, I thought that I was going to work in their data systems department because I was a geek boy, a computer guy. And I found out that I liked being an air traffic controller more than I liked being a computer programmer. And it was a passion, not just a job, but a true pleasure to do. I did it for 24 years and had a great time doing it.
And now you're associated with a program in Anchorage that does training?
Now I'm an associate professor of air traffic control of aviation technology at the University of Alaska, and I teach specifically control tower operations.
I'm sure that some listeners, particularly those who have been involved with the aeronautical industry, are aware that that's the case, but there may be others listeners that might not be aware of how big that program is and how long it's been in existence. How about a little history?
The first school started about 25 years ago, and it is a joint effort between the universities and the Federal Aviation Administration to train air traffic controllers. And it started out very small, and they became about 33 schools that over the nation that were responsible for the initial training of air traffic controllers. From there, about 6 months ago, the FAA decided for political reasons that they didn't need air traffic controllers to hold a university degree. Simply coming in off the street was a good idea. Well, now I may have a vested interest in this.
Okay.
I'm sure I do. But the question is, well, you don't hire physicians off the street. If you want a lawyer, you want somebody with a degree. So we thought that that was not a good idea and have been working to get this altered, saying that it would be a good idea to have air traffic controllers with a university degree. Not the only way. I knew people that I started with degrees, as I did, that were great air traffic controllers. And I knew other people whose most responsible work experience had been working at Burger King. And they were great air traffic controllers. Some were not. They didn't have the empathy required. So I think it's a good thing. Perhaps some of my former students are listening. If they do, maybe they could have some input on this.
Okay.
As they're working as air traffic controllers now. If I can do an aside,
sure.
There are a couple kinds of air traffic controllers. The ones that say go up, go down, turn left, turn right, fall into two general categories, en route controllers and terminal controllers. The en route controllers, like the ones that worked at Chicago Center before the fire, are one kind. They're responsible for the long-range supervision and control of air traffic between airports, between busy terminal areas. The other kind, the terminal controllers, have two subgroups. One, the tower controllers, the ones that say cleared to land, cleared for takeoff, and the terminal radar controllers, who are responsible for the relatively small area around a busy airport, such as Anchorage International. They're all slightly different. I found that my passion was working in a tower. I liked that the best. Plus, I could work on my suntan as I'm sitting up in that nice room with all the windows.
Right, right. So there's a whole raft of questions I have, but what you have done is you've mentioned the Chicago incident. From your perspective here, how do you view what happened there?
Somebody is always unhappy with something in their life, and this poor fellow was unhappy and set the place on fire. What he set on fire was a critical infrastructure. It carried all the communications lines, which is basically what air traffic control does. It from one spot to another. Each air traffic controller has basically a glorified switchboard, and they're responsible for talking to other controllers and getting data through computers and talking to the airplanes, mostly using radios. If you cut all that, it doesn't work. So you have a en route center responsible for large portions of the airspace, everything around Chicago, one of the busiest hubs in the nation, that can't talk to anybody. As a result, it's useless. So there are plans in effect to distribute those job functions to other air traffic control centers. Mm-hmm. You can drop some of it to the tower, to the terminal controllers, but a lot of it has to be done by en route controllers at different facilities. It looks like that plan didn't work too well. Because of that, the air traffic controllers that were working that day said, let's just slow everything down. If we slow it down, we reduce the probability of having an oops, something bad happening, the airplanes getting too close together. That worked. Nobody got too close to anybody, at least as far as we know, and it worked out okay. But because the system was slowed down so much, the people in Portland, Oregon couldn't leave. They couldn't go to Chicago. They couldn't get there. That was a bit of a problem. The pushback from this will be the FAA used bad planning to design the contingency plan that handled the outage of an en route center. The problem that the FAA has is it is very expensive to build a control facility like that. It doesn't matter where it is. The Air Route Control Center working Alaska Anchorage Center could be operated from Miami, Florida. It's just all telecommunications. It doesn't matter where the thing physically is. Alaska works out to the end of the Aleutian Chain, up toward the North Pole, as far east as Canada, as far south, halfway between Canada and, halfway between Alaska and Washington. It doesn't matter where it's physically located, but to build a replacement one for that somewhere that just sits idle would be very expensive. So what was the best thing to do? Nobody's really certain what the right thing, but it was a bad result from not having a backup facility like that.
Right. And of course, this is within the broader context of some recent discussions, for example, about I'm thinking from a security standpoint, towers and other facilities, recent discussions in Washington, D.C. regarding access to the White House or, it's the confluence of events is something that brings people to say, this is a world that we have come to believe has a nice blend of people and technology. And actually, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the technology of this whole thing. We've dealt with a little bit of the people part, but I have some peripheral knowledge that there have been long efforts made to improve things such as the equipment used in towers, systems, and so on. Let's talk a little bit about the technology first, and we'll get on with the others. What has been happening in terms of improving technology, even whether it's to provide redundancy or to provide better tools for air traffic controllers to use?
Well, the technology is using satellites. In the old days, you would have to run a microwave line from one area to another to have a radio work, to communicate from one to another. A lot of the information runs across the internet. It is encoded. It is secure for the most part. We have had no major incursions, no spoofing of anything. It seems to be working fairly well. Doesn't mean that's going to happen in the future, but it has worked well so far, although until Chicago was set on fire, it was working well as well. There is a program called NextGen, which changes the way air traffic control is run. It is probably driven by efficiency. The airlines want this to run as smoothly as possible. Every time an aircraft that's descending has to stop its descent,
right,
it is expensive. So this gives the air traffic controllers computer tools that allow the aircraft to do specific things at a specific time that they want to. It allows the system to anticipate the needs of the aircraft so that efficiencies exist. So the computer tools are getting better. The system is using the internet to communicate. It is secure right up until now for those functions. Costs drive everything the FAA does.
Right.
So as these tools become more efficient, the system becomes less expensive, which is good for everybody, including pilots and the flying public. The problem is to implement the new systems, you have to have redundancy. The old systems have to be kept in place.
Right.
One system like that would be radar. The FAA would like to reduce the number of radar facilities. They would like to reduce the number of nav aids and go to an internal system that would have the pilots, the aircraft, tell the FAA where they are. If that system works properly, you get an order of magnitude reduction in those costs. You get an improvement for the pilots because they know more about the environment, where the airplanes are around them. The reason for that is it's a relatively tiny bit of bandwidth. When the air traffic controller talks to a pilot, they don't have time to say, oh, by the way, 5 miles away, there's somebody over there. If that information is done via data link, is done with computers from one airplane to the FAA, nobody has to talk about it, and a lot of information can be transferred in a short amount of time. Better resources for the pilot. More efficiency exists, and it is probably a better system. The problem is the cost associated with running the old systems as well as the next generation systems.
Right. Right. Well, two things. First of all, we've been joined by my wife, Lee Hendrickson.
Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Lee.
Nice to see you or hear you.
You as well.
And secondly, we've had a recent experience which was instructive to us. We went out in a Beaver out of Lake Hood and flew with a gentleman who's an experienced pilot, a FedEx pilot flying the Beaver. And I was particularly interested in his interaction with the tower. It filed a flight plan and was interacting certainly with the tower as we changed slightly from one thing or another, and just that announcement of other aircraft that were going to be in the area. So most of our discussion has been talking about not a distinguished set of planes, whether they're commercial planes versus light planes. But I know particularly in Alaska and in the Anchorage area, there are a lot of light aircraft that have varying lower degrees of equipment on board. How does that all change when we're talking about large numbers of light aircraft?
This system is expensive. The next generation system is expensive to install. There was a lot of pushback from the industry because it was so expensive. But what used to cost $100,000 and then cost $10,000 is going to end up costing a few thousand dollars. The radios in one of my airplanes cost a few thousand dollars. Just the communication radios cost a few thousand dollars. So the cost is not overwhelming because technology always gets better. When I got my first cell phone, the thing weighed about 5 pounds. New cell phones don't do that. New cell phones have GPS. New cell phones could have inertial navigation built into them. The reason that the navigation and communication systems in airplanes are not that cheap, they don't make as many navigation and communication radios for airplanes as they do Samsung Galaxy S5s.
Okay.
There are a lot of them, and because there are so many, the cost for each individual unit is less. So the cost will be a few thousand dollars, which is in keeping with current prices. What's actually going to happen, what's going to be required by the aircraft, by the FAA for the aircraft, is a bit in flux. Certainly large commercial aircraft will have to install this sort of equipment. They will have to have backup systems in case the primary system fails. So it will work very well. The costs have come down drastically. There is less complaint about that regulation that will require the pilots to install this new hardware. It seems to be working relatively well. Now, I'm a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and they want to keep for their members, general aviation aircraft owners and pilots, costs low, which is a great thing because I have to buy this stuff for my aircraft as well. But as things change, as the original technology is adopted, it becomes becomes less expensive, which is a good thing for everybody. So at some point, most aircraft will hold this information, this the hardware required for the next generation system. Mm-hmm. I hope that helped.
Yes, yes, it did.
I have a funny analogy. You can tell me if it works, Alan. And that is, it's like my dog is microchipped, and he can read all the microchips of all the other dogs in the area.
I have never heard that. Lee, when we've worked together, I've always been impressed. I am impressed with your analogy. That is very, very good. So the doggy can find out what the other doggy smells like before they get there.
Yeah.
This next generation system is the way that works.
Okay.
Well, one of the things that's emerging as I'm listening to you, Alan, is the sense that, like many industries or situations, what we're talking about is the turbulence associated with transition. And we began by talking about a transition with the people that are working in the system, transition in, from the sense of what backgrounds they might require and the training they would have, and I assume continued questions of transition as new equipment comes to work, and all of this flowing around. You've had a long experience. How would you place the present time in terms of transition? Sometimes we seem to plateau. Sometimes we seem to be moving very quickly. Where are we right now in the whole transition of the air traffic control arena?
Air traffic control, aviation, there's a huge change happening right now, not just with air traffic controllers and pilots and communication. Navigation has switched to GPS, satellite navigation, more accuracy, less cost, everything else. It seems, being a participant as a pilot in the system right now, it feels like things are changing, but not overwhelmingly fast. Change is bad, is what we used to say. If you would change something, it's hard for people to get used to it. So it doesn't feel like it's going too fast. If you don't participate in anything for 6 months, you'll find a big change. The change is happening, but it doesn't seem to be overwhelmingly fast.
Okay.
But to speak on the subject a little differently, if you look at the rate of change that we're experiencing now in aviation, it is a drastic change, a logarithmic change. We have gone from, when I started, basically post-World War II navigation and communication systems. The systems hadn't changed since 1945. Small changes, not big changes. In the last 5 years, with the advent of most cell phones, for example, being able to use GPS positioning, the communication across the internet, those changes and the change that the first changes allow are exponential. There are huge changes. You may not feel it if you're part of the industry going from one point to the next fall, 6 months away. But those changes are overwhelming. In another 5 or 10 years, the system will not be recognizable from a World War II standpoint. Data link is a huge thing. Internet for airplanes. if you're a pilot and you want to get the weather, right now you have to ask somebody or you have to buy your own really expensive system. If you have this next generation system, the pilots are able to get weather, they're able to get position information for other aircraft, they're able to tell air traffic controllers where they're going. This is science fiction stuff. This is wonderful.
Right.
As a geek boy myself, I love it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking when we were flying with our friend Bob in the Beaver, he filed a weather status with the tower, and then he asked for a weather status for Squintna area, and all of that would become automated instead of saying, has anyone said what the weather's like in X area? It would be just right there.
We were also aware that pilots these days have substituted carrying a large folder of maps and other information. Commercial pilots are being given iPads, for example, that contain information that's very, very quickly accessed.
All the charts, yeah.
You've seen the pilots walking around the airports with their black bag. That bag weighed about 20 pounds, and it was full of approach plates and en route charts. Even VFR, general aviation aircraft, would have to carry the same sort of charting information. I've flown across the country with most of that information contained within my head, but it's hard to do. It's hard to haul around, and it's expensive. If it comes from the FAA and it's little or no cost, everybody's happy. You have the most recent information. The air traffic controllers don't have somebody calling them up and asking them to read them how to make an approach into a specific airport in bad weather. It's good for everybody. This is just wonderful stuff. I like it as a pilot. I like it as a former air traffic controller. And as a taxpayer, I love it because it's cheap. Mm-hmm. The transition back to that, the transition from what we have right now to what we're going to have, because you have to hold the legacy systems operational until you transition to the new system, that's expensive and it's a bit painful.
In any industry, when that happens, it's expensive and painful, but it's also expensive if you don't run them in parallel for a while.
Right. One of the other questions I have, particularly since we have a large military presence here, in Alaska, is how do civilian and military air traffic controllers work together?
The air traffic control system in the United States is civilian. It is entirely run by civilians, except at specific military airports. The tower controllers at a military airport are military. Everything else is civilian. Everything else is run by the FAA. The interaction between those two is slightly different. The military air traffic controllers, not the ones in the tower that say cleared to land and cleared for takeoff, but the ones that are working in military areas, their primary function is to make the airplanes get closer together. They want to run intercepts. The function of civilian air traffic control is to have the airplanes not get too close together. So even though the functions of the majority of the military air traffic controllers are different than the civilian controllers, we're all air traffic controllers, and we do the same sort of work, and we all drink lots of coffee, and we all tell really good stories. Some of them are even true, and it's not a problem. The communication between civilian and military is very good.
Okay, so what's one of your stories that may or may not be true from your air traffic control days? You've piqued my interest, Alan.
Well, let's see. That's like asking my students to tell them a story. If they get tired of me lecturing too much, they'll ask me a question. It'll make me tell a story. Well, I can tell you my coffee story. My coffee story is, until I became an air traffic controller, I didn't drink coffee. In a previous life, I was a paramedic, and I didn't drink coffee, didn't find any need to do that. But air traffic control is a little bit different. It was outside my comfort zone. I was a smart fellow when I went to school and didn't have any problem with anything. So I went to work my first midnight shift, and sitting in the back of the room, there was this 5-gallon coffee pot. And I went, oh, well, everybody else is drinking coffee. Back in those days, they were all smoking cigarettes as well, but I wasn't interested in the cigarettes. But I really thought maybe the coffee would be a good idea. So I went back there, got a coffee cup, and put some in. This coffee cup, this coffee machine, had been brewing for about 6 months. They never cleaned it. All they did was take the old grounds out, put some new grounds in, pour some more water in it. So the brew that was in there was dark and thick and acidic. It was just the epitome of bad truck stop coffee, and it was horrible. And I drank that stuff for 20 years until somebody bought a $1,000 espresso machine for the control tower, and my eyes were opened to an entirely new world. So the joke about air traffic controller coffee is, how can you tell if it's good coffee? Well, if you take your spoon to stir the coffee and the spoon sits up straight in the coffee, that's good coffee. But if the spoon then dissolves into the coffee, that's excellent air traffic controller coffee. So I think this stuff is good. I think this horrible rot gut coffee is the way to drink, even though I'm looking at a fancy coffee machine right now. I have become gentrified, as it were.
A coffee snob?
A coffee snob. So I go to Starbucks like everything else and get my quad latte and enjoy myself.
But it is a quad, so that's the air traffic controller creed. Lots of caffeine.
Oh, well, that's the story. You go to work, you walk up the stairs into the tower cab, you have a quad, you read the pre-duty binder, you have another quad, and then you look at the supervisor and say, hey, I'm ready to go to work. And because that day everybody came in, they say, well, just go downstairs. There's not much going on. Take a break. I don't want to take a break. I need to work someplace. I've just had 8 shots of espresso. I need to work.
Well, and of course, that's been the question also. My understanding is that there have been some concerns expressed about the numbers of air traffic controllers on duty or available. Has that become a problem over recent years, staffing not at high levels but at maybe low levels?
At the high-level facilities, air traffic controllers are easily bored. If they do one job for too long, they need to do something else that's challenging. After a few years doing a specific job, you either need a new job because you're not good at it, or it becomes boring. So they look for new challenges, which is a problem for the supervisors. How do you keep these guys that are trying to keep themselves amused? Because air traffic controllers pick on each other. They do that because they're bored, and they do that because they want to keep everybody strong. So the supervisors have to keep these volatile personalities apart. Some pilots have called air traffic controllers prima donnas, and the controllers call pilots prima donnas. We're all adrenaline junkies. We like doing things exciting. Not too exciting, because that becomes scary, but exciting, something fun. It works out as time passes. So we've got a system that works.
Well, I have one other question. I saw a movie some time ago, actually, that John Cusack played in that dealt with two traffic controllers that were sort of in a contest with one another. Do you remember that movie by any chance?
Pushing Tin, absolutely. I'll have to play that for my students. Pushing Tin was amazingly accurate. They had really good technical advisors. It's still a drama. It's still a movie.
Sure.
The amazing part about it is the interactions that were displayed in the movie, in Pushing Tin, the personal interactions, the who's sleeping with whose wife, that sort of thing. Now, of course, we never really do that, but it comes up in polite conversation. Those interactions were understated in Pushing Tin. It is weirder to be an air traffic controller than the movie displayed it. It's fun, but there's a lot of drama there.
Okay. I thought so. It felt just as an outsider looking in, and of course reviews and so on, it felt that way. Well, Alan, we've covered a lot of ground, and we're coming to the end of our time. Do you have any last comments to make?
The skies are safe. If you're looking for a career, air traffic control is wonderful. I'm a third generation pilot. I thought I'd get my daughter involved in aviation. She has no interest. She's in school in California for biology. So there's no accounting for taste. Enjoy aviation. Flying commercially is safe. I've always wanted to own a Beaver like your friend, but it's always been too expensive for me. Maybe sometime. Maybe when I become a FedEx pilot, I'll be able to buy one.
Well, actually, just to clarify, he gets to fly it, but it belongs to someone else.
The best of all possible worlds.
Right. Okay.
Have a good morning.
You too. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.